It was an unknown wilderness. It wasn't long before they went into the wide valleys of Kentucky through the Cumberland Gap.
Welcome to this edition of Old Kentucky Tales, the only podcast that solemnly swears that none of its participants have fought a duel with deadly weapons within this state or out of it. Is that true for you too, Barry?
I plead the fifth.
All right, fair enough. Today's title is Barry Craig's Two Funniest Tales. I am your host, Brent Taylor, Assistant Professor of History at West Kentucky Community and Technical College. And with me is the man who is just as totally awesome now as he was in the 80s. And 90s, and yes, the following yes. century as uh-huh. well.
Whichever one.
He is an associate professor of communication at West Kentucky Community and Technical College, Jason Donner.
I think this is great. We got Barry Craig here with us.
Yeah, very special guest.
Yeah, very special.
Author of multiple books on Kentucky history, such as The Hidden History of Kentucky Soldiers and the forthcoming Kentucky's Rebel Press. He is as smooth as Obama, yet as fiery as Trump. Professor Emeritus of History at WKCTC, Barry Craig.
Thank you, I guess.
In this episode of Old Kentucky Tales, we will look at football, past and present, and yesterday's news. And for our main event, we will ask Barry Craig to tell us the two funniest stories in all of Kentucky politics. And along the way, don't forget to support the fake history sponsors who fakely support Old Kentucky Tales. Yesterday's news. In yesterday's news, we have a 1909 article saying that they want to make football safer, and they're going to have a big meeting about it. What do you think, Jason?
What was the condition of football at that time anyway? They didn't wear helmets at some point. Is that when the helmet got added, or something other than that leather cap that they started out with?
Yeah, I don't know the exact transition. It's probably around in here somewhere.
Right.
It'll be late 19th, early 20th century. But at the
same
time,
they're still talking about it like 100 years later.
Yeah, see, that's the whole thing.
Right.
I mean, this year, it seems like I've heard more than ever about, well, we've got to make the game safer, and what about concussions, and we need new helmets, and...
But these guys are bigger than they ever were 100 years ago, too. That's what the deal is.
That's true. They're bigger, faster,
people, stronger. Right.
They have made rule changes over the years. It used to be legal, for example, for the offensive lineman to take a blow to the face from the defensive lineman.
Okay.
They got rid of those kinds of things. So I guess if they just keep at it, one little rule at a time, maybe 100 years from now, they'll finally determine that it's safe, right?
Right.
But
if you collide with a giant man and you're a giant man, there's going to be some damage done.
I guess maybe that's the ultimate point because...
That's the fun.
They've been worried about it. Well, that's the whole game. It's the whole game.
Right.
So, who knows? All I know is it's time to hear from a word from our sponsors.
Here's a new way to serve that old favorite, the hamburger. Make it with Kellogg's All Brand to stretch the meat supply to give the popular hamburger new interest and to get All Brand's nutritional benefits. Valuable proteins, carbohydrates, vitamins, and minerals. Kellogg's All Brand Burgers. Beat eggs slightly, add salt, pepper, onion, parsley, milk, ketchup, All Brand. Let soak until most of the moisture is taken up. Add beef and mix thoroughly. Shape into 12 patties, bake in hot oven at 450 degrees about 30 minutes, or boil about 20 minutes. Yields 6 servings of 12 2.5-inch brand burgers.
All right, who wants to take a stab at this one?
Well, I believe that's the origin of the term gaseous diffusion.
Yeah, right here in West Paducah. That's
exactly.
Definitely it. The background on this is it's 1943, and we are stretching meat to preserve things for World War II.
Okay.
So that's why you're going to be pouring ketchup on your cereal.
Right. Well, it's just another way, I guess, of selling Kellogg's, too.
Sure, and they're patriotic, so
yeah.
You get the extra bonus.
Mm-hmm. But it's not just totally a brand burger.
Great
pun, by
the way.
Which would be more like a cookie, I guess, if you fried that thing up.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think boil is the best way, don't you?
Oh, I just can't even stand like the thought of this one right here. I don't know if you noticed, there's also a few ingredients, things like minced onion, chopped parsley.
Yeah, that's just kind of like fake Well, there is meat in it, but it probably would taste like what you would buy now. That's that fake food, fake meat, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely...
Veggie chicken, veggie meat.
You have to do what you have to do to defeat the Axis. That's about the bottom line of that one. And now we are ready for our main event, which is Barry Craig's two funniest stories from the stump. Take it away, Barry.
With some difficulty did I choose two, because 200 is more like it. But I'll start off with a story about a man named Fess Whitaker. Fess Whitaker, to hear him tell the story, was Teddy Roosevelt's top soldier at the Battle of San Juan Hill. Now, let's go back to 1898 in the Spanish-American War, and Colonel Teddy Roosevelt and the Rough Riders at the bottom of San Juan Hill. And so before the battle, Teddy went to Fess and said, "Corporal Whitaker, that hill has got to be taken." And he said, "Colonel, it's as good as took." "But Fess," he said, "there must be a million Spaniards up there." "That's okay, Colonel. We're going to take that hill." And up the hill they went. Bodies dropping all around, gunfire, smoke, the fog of battle. They get to the top of the hill is taken, Old Glory is planted, and as the smoke clears, Colonel Roosevelt sees Corporal Whitaker has survived this awful battle. And he went up to him and he said, "Fess, you know, this day will live forever in the annals of American military history." And Fess said, "Colonel, that is indeed true." And he said, "Fess, you know, one of us is destined to be president of the United States." And Fess said, "Colonel, that's true. But I'll tell you what, you go ahead and be president. All I want to be is jailer of Letcher County, Kentucky." And Fess was elected.
Yeah.
Interesting story about Fess. Fess was a progressive Republican back in the day. And the judge of Letcher County was a conservative. And the judge put up a man to run against Fess in the Republican primary. And Fess went to the judge and said, "Judge, did you put him up to running against me?" The judge said, "I sure did." And Fess did the honorable thing, hit him right in the mouth. And Fess was put in his own jail. And he was reelected from behind the bars of his own jail. There is a photograph in the Courier Journal of Fess Whitaker peeking out from behind the bars saying, "Vote for me." Later on, he saw the judge and poured a pitcher of buttermilk on his head. That is one of my favorite stories.
Yeah, that's really kind of a neat thing. Like, maybe that even inspired some votes.
The fact that
once people heard the story about that.
And, you know, I used to tell that story. I travel the state giving speeches on old-time Kentucky politics called Bombast, Bourbon, and Burgoo, which is the title of one of my books. And I used to refer to him as the legendary Fess Whitaker, and this fellow said, "No, he was my great-great-uncle." Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, Fess wrote his memoirs. Now, here's the question. Was Fess Whitaker a Rough Rider? The answer is yes, but he joined in 1899 after the war was over and was a cook. That story, by the way, has been told many times, and sometimes it's World War I, sometimes it's World War II. In Kentucky politics, stories they're fair game.
Mm-hmm.
The second story, to me, it tops them all. I always save the best for last. This story dates to the 1915 governor's race between Ed P. Morrow, the Republican, and Augustus Owsley Stanley, the Democrat. I used to cite this often in my history classes as an example of how politics ought to be carried out. Morrow was a Rock Rib Republican. Stanley was a devout Democrat, but these two fellows were friends. They traveled the state together, rode the same train cars. They stayed in the same hotel rooms to cut down on expenses. They drank from the same bottle. They had meals together. They'd go out on the stump, tear each other up, and then have a drink afterwards and laugh about it. Both of these men were among the greatest of Kentucky orators, and that says something. This state is famous for orators, or used to be before television killed it. Stanley would open his speech by saying the following: My name is Augustus Owsley Stanley. I'm from Henderson, Kentucky, where the cypress trees grow so tall that the topmost branches tickle the feet of Democratic angels in heaven, and where the roots grow so deep they scratch the bald heads of Republican sinners in hell. Not a bad opening, and Morrow was just as good as he was. Well, again, my speech is called Bombast, Bourbon, and Burger. Bombast I define as the high political art of using many words to say little or nothing. It's a real art. Burgoo, or burgoo is what we call it in Western Kentucky, is a stew served at picnic. In fact, it was so popular that political rallies that had it were called a burgoo. We're going to have a burgoo for Morrow. We're going to have a burgoo for Stanley.
Like chili supper.
Yes, yes. And burgoo, you can still get it from time to in different places, but it's not what it used to be. Bourbon, of course, is the staff of life of Kentucky politics. Used to be Amos Kendall, the famous newspaper editor of the 19th century, said that a true Kentucky statesman was someone who could drink grog all day and not get drunk. That is, of course, a gift. George Prentice, who was the editor of the Louisville Journal, once said on election days in Kentucky, whiskey and apple toddy flow through our streets like the Euphrates River through ancient Babylon. Mm-hmm. That's lyrical. Okay, so 1915, it's a hot day. These two candidates meet on the trail at a picnic. And as they both arrived, they were plied with large quantities of bourbon and burgoo. Very hot day.
Tough combo.
It is. So it came time for them to speak. So they mounted the speaker's platform, and Ed Morrow went first. And by all accounts of this, he gave a reasonably coherent address considering what he'd ingested previously. And so with great relief, Ed Morrow sat down. Now it was Stanley's turn. He stood up. He froze. The platform began to spin one way and then another, and on its side. And he's standing there. He can't sit down. He can't go forward. He's immobile. And then the Civil War breaks out in his stomach. The stomach begins to churn and churn and churn. And then the Rebs and Yanks begin to move up his gullet, slowly but surely, toward the inevitable. He licks his lips as if that'll stop it. And just at that fateful moment, he spun backwards and threw up off the platform. Ed Morrow.
Weren't people behind him?
No, they were in front of him. There's nobody behind him, thankfully.
That's good.
Thankfully.
It could have been like a Stephen King novel.
Yeah, projectile bomb. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so Morrow is saying to himself, thank you, God. Thank you, Jesus. I'm the next governor of Kentucky. I know Owsley, that's what they call him. Owsley is a great speaker. He's a great lawyer. He's really sharp, but he cannot possibly recover from this. He's done this in front of God Almighty and all these people. They saw him. There's nothing he can do to deny this. He might as well just surrender to go home. Well, surrender was an unknown word to A.O. Stanley. Having ejected this foul stuff from his innards, he is able to ambulate to the podium. He grips the podium with one hand, then the other. Still a little alcohol fogged, but he's thinking somewhat clearly. He looks out over the crowd. He says, gentlemen, women can't vote in 1915. He says, gentlemen, I wish to apologize to you from the bottom of my heart for that disgusting display you have just witnessed. But you see, I couldn't help it. Every time I hear Ed Morrow speak, it makes me sick at my stomach. The crowd exploded in laughter.
Yeah.
Morrow knew he was sunk, and he was elected.
Is that right? Yeah.
That story, I first heard of this. My wife read this story in an old Louisville Courier Journal article by Alan Trout, one of the great magazine writers of the Courier Journal. And the story wasn't attributed. And so I thought, where did Trout get this? So I decided to call up the greatest of all Kentucky historians, Thomas D. Clark at the University of Kentucky. Dr. Clark had to be 101 years old. He spoke as he wrote, which was lyrical. And I said, of course, Dr. Clark, you have heard that story. Oh, yes, I have. I said, well, I read it in Alan Trout's article in the Courier Journal. Yes, yes, yes. But he didn't attribute it. Can you tell me where you got the story? He said, sure. Stanley told me himself. And that's the advantage of living to 101 years old, right, and knowing all these governors. Another thing about this story that fascinated me was it was written right after Ed Morrow had died. And so Morrow, by the way, was elected governor afterwards. And these two fellows became friends. They both were lawyers in Washington. And once a week, they would get together in each other's house, have a meal, retire to the study, smoke cigars, drink whiskey, and tell stories. Stanley said his life would never be the same after the death of his friend Ed Morrow. They're both buried in the Frankfort Cemetery, and their graves aren't far apart. And I've got an idea. In the wee hours of the morning, they rise from their graves, their spirits, and they clink glasses, and they tell stories.
Right. Yeah.
That's my favorite of all.
Yeah.
And by the way, the other story, yeah, I'd like to just add, if we've got time to add.
Sure.
Every time I would see Dr. Clark, he would tell me a new Stanley story, and he knew he had a bag full of them. And so Stanley went to a gathering of ex-governors in Louisville, and he walks in, and try to imagine the governor saying this today. He walks in and says, fellas, there's two things I've had in my life I never want again. What's that, Owsley? Gonorrhea and the governorship of Kentucky.
G&G.
That's it. Just a marvelous story. And again, I've always used this example of how politics ought to be. They were both partisans. Both were strong supporters of their parties. But these two guys were friends. And it's a remarkable campaign. Not the best-known governors of Kentucky, but nonetheless. But these stories are terrific. Stump speaking was a real art in Kentucky for years. Henry Clay, and he wasn't by any means the only one. And I was really mystified as to why you don't see many stump orators anymore. And it's very simple. Television killed it. Don't know how long it took me to tell these two stories, but you can't tell that in 30 seconds or a minute. You can't do that in a sound bite. These politicians practice this.
Right. It was a tradition, right?
It was.
In those days.
It
people
was.
It's how you got the message out,
and they
too.
They probably came out to see part.
They
to
did.
See those debates or those speeches, expecting to be entertained as
absolutely.
Much as informed.
They were.
It was an afternoon's entertainment. You're correct.
It
right.
was. And as Brent could tell you, Henry Clay could speak 2 or 3 hours
right.
and keep an audience enthralled.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody could do that today because, well, the attention spans are much shorter. But it was entertainment. It was. And these, I've always wished, I bet you have too, to have heard Henry Clay. What was he like? What was his voice like? Or Stanley, or Morrow, or any of these other old politicians. But I spent my whole career teaching at the college, trying to convince my students that Kentucky politics was every bit as entertaining as Wildcat basketball.
Right.
It's pretty close if you're going to bring the puke story out.
Yeah, yeah, that one is. And then there's some others that are triple X-rated that I won't. It's probably a family program I won't tell you about. But they're marvelous stories.
Are there ever like any kind of movie or any TV show actors that managed to capture that? You know, where you can actually watch it and get a sense of what that would be like to be a voter in those days, or to be running for office in those days, where you literally just traveled around and talked. That was it. You had some, you know, newspaper coverage, but
there are
is there a great movie out there like
I don't
that?
Know about,
you know,
I don't know
maybe
about,
Lincoln or something like that. But besides him,
not to my knowledge. But there yeah. are actual films of Barclay, Alvin Barclay.
Yeah,
Barclay was a great orator as well. In fact, you know how Barclay died. He said, I would rather be a servant in the house of the Lord and sit in the seat of the mighty and drop dead of a heart attack at the mock Democratic convention at Washington Lee University in Lexington, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
There's another Barclay story if I had time to tell it. Do I have time to tell it, or am I running out of time here?
I bet you could.
All right, very quickly. This was told to me by Spencer Truitt, who was Albert Barclay's grandson. And he said that he was having dinner with Grandma and Granddad at the table. And so Spencer told this dirty joke. And Vice President Barclay said, now, Spencer, you shouldn't have told that in front of your grandmother. That was not nice. Oh, I'm sorry, Granddaddy. I won't do this again. He said, see that you don't. So Truett said a few minutes later he's walking down the hall and Barkley's in the bathroom practicing the joke in front of a mirror. So that's what you do in politics. But it's a marvelous study. This fascinates me. I love these stories. I collect them, been collecting them for about 30 or 40 years now.
And travel around and talk about them,
too. I do. I travel.
Too.
I've gone as far
as— Or they're in your
books
as well.
They're in my books, but I've traveled as far as Maysville. And what's a lot of fun, if somebody says, well, that was really great, but have you heard the one about Barkley and this? Or you heard the one about Happy Chandler and that? Or heard the one about John Sherman Cooper and that? And they're wonderful stories. But Dr. Clark was, he was superb. If you ever had a chance to hear him speak, you had a real treat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh yeah, he's a legend in Kentucky history. No question about it. Not just Kentucky history either, but if you look at maps, a lot of times the maps they used to use in the classrooms, look closely at the bottom, it says Thomas Clark, University of Kentucky.
Oh, yeah.
So nationally famous as well as being a Kentucky
legend.
And
a great Southern historian as well.
Yeah, right.
But he spoke, if you read his books, beautifully written, but he spoke the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what else is beautifully written?
What is that?
Copy from our sponsors.
Oh,
and
great.
In this case, Coats and Furs Reduced. To make a decisive clearance of women's and children's coats and furs, emphatic price reductions prevail. $30 Sable Fox Scarves, now $24.98. Squirrel Scarves, $9.98. And Skunk Fur Scarves, $2.98. All of these are rock-bottom prices. J. Bacon and Sons, Market Street, between 3rd and 4th.
The skunk is the cheapest one.
And that makes sense, doesn't
it? Yeah.
I mean, if I'm going to have fur,
it
and
is
I'm thinking top of the line, skunk versus sable, I'm going to go with the sable
it's
on that
kind
one.
Of a, I'm going to stand up for the skunk here for a minute. It's kind of a pretty fur, you know. It's got the stripe down. It's not exactly bad, but do you want to go out wearing a skunk?
It's the idea of the skunk.
Is that a skunk on you?
It's not the fur,
you?
it's the thought of it.
Right.
And so we got to have a tiebreaker. Barry, what do you say? You going with sable, or are you going to save a few bucks and get the skunk?
Well, I've got to go with the skunk. It's much more earthy.
That's true. You're a man of the people, so I would expect you to go with the skunk. I'm sort of pretentious. I'll go with the sable. Jason?
Oh, me?
Are
well, I'm
you
not gonna
ready?
Pick a squirrel. A cute little furry little happy squirrel.
Yeah, the mid-grade.
Yeah.
Perfect. That's the perfect compromise creature.
In the spirit of Henry Clay.
Right.
Exactly right. Bourbon barrels and squirrel scarves.
It's going to take a number of squirrels to finish out that scarf.
10 or 12.
Yeah.
Baker's dozen. Something like that. Jason, I know I catch you off guard every time.
No, not anymore, Brent. Not
you're
anymore.
Ready for it this time. What is your biggest takeaway?
Well, I've pre-thought about it.
Nice.
Or it'd be better to say I paid attention. Yeah.
That is half the battle.
Well, I it's interesting to me how it has changed, like Barry was talking about, that the politician, the approach just changed and kind of like Barkley was absorbing another story in from his grandson. You know, it's accumulation of stories that were always there, reservoir stories to tell wherever they ended up. Kind of like what you do, Barry. You're accumulating stories, too, about those times, and they're just all in there,
and
hundreds.
The only two that fascinated me about these old politicians is there was no amplification. Now, I don't know about you, but if I were to orate for an hour or two, my voice would probably fail.
Mm-hmm.
How they did that is interesting as well. Did they practice? Did they drink? I mean, what did they do to get
bourbon?
Yeah, apparently they're well lubricated. But again, it's also an era in which there are no special effects. It was you and a crowd and your wit, and it was stump wit. I mean, it was you had, and a lot of times these when they debated, that was a real debate.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a simultaneous press conference, and when your opponent got one on you, you had to get him back. But they were very good at it, very, very good at it, and it fascinates me. And, again, my big regret is I would love to have heard Henry Clay. What was he, a baritone? What was his voice like? And interestingly enough, in historical accounts, they never talk about what the voice sounded like.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you.
That is interesting because they're always obsessed with what they look like.
Yes.
And they describe their nose. He has a Roman nose and all these different features. But it is never much about the voice.
The voice. And of course, then they quote what the politician said. And again, I don't know. I've never seen any descriptions of Henry Clay's voice. But he obviously had something going for him, as did these orators. And that was a real – you had to have that as an attribute. You know, today you've got these generic campaign commercials when candidate X walks across a field with his coat over his shoulder and his wife and three kids and goes and stands by a fence. You know, the guy could stumble and fall.
Mm-hmm.
They'll keep shooting if they get it right.
Right.
And it's the same thing with speaking in a commercial. How many takes they do to get a commercial – but this was all live in front of the crowd, and these crowds were rowdy too. It was like Fancy Farm to the 10th Power. That's another whole series of stories on pranks these guys pulled on each other, and they're legendary. They're hilarious.
But the situation they found themselves in called for wit. It called for being quick.
And you think about it. What other entertainment did you have? You couldn't go watch TV or listen to the radio, go to a football game. Politics was entertainment, but I've always been intrigued by the fact that Henry Clay could keep an audience enthralled for 3 hours.
You know, you have me imagining something now. Modern campaign commercial, Henry Clay. I'd rather be right than president.
Right.
I'm Henry Clay, and I approve this ad.
Exactly.
We have now turned to the final page of this chapter, but never fear. Are you scared, Barry, that it's the end?
The end of what?
That is the question of the day.
You're done, Barry.
More quirky old Kentucky tales are yet to be told. Special thanks to our sound engineer, Todd Birdsong, the Paducah School of Art and Design, and WKMS, and the rest is history.